Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Rob McKeefer, and this is episode number 279. Can you believe that, guys? 279 episodes. I want to thank you for listening each week. Really appreciate those of you that like, share, comment. Just helps us continue to highlight the fantastic people that we have in the profession. Also want to thank our sponsors, and specifically InTech, for bringing this episode to you for free. I only partner with companies that I believe in, both the people and the product. And InTech has been a fantastic partner, great people, great product. And so if you're in the market, please reach out to them. If not, just let them know how much you appreciate them being a part of the show. This week, I'm joined by Simon Taylor and Steve Nightingale. These guys are my knights in shining armor. They've been fantastic partners over in China. We, as many of you guys know, we have several coaches that have gone to China. And that they work for and directly for Steve and Simon and the Chinese Olympic Committee over there. Just done a fantastic, since they've come on, it has been night and day difference, and really appreciate you guys, both what you're doing for the coaches that we've sent over there and for coming on the show, guys.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, what an introduction, Ron. Thank you for having us.
Guys, I mean, you're, I guess the official title is Director of Sports Performance and Rehab Services and the Assistant Director. You're heading up a new initiative in China, you know, for Team China and coordinating, as many people probably know or maybe don't know, there's several different companies and there's several different coaches, you know, that not just China, but countries around the world that, you know, that go and work with you know, you guys are both from UK originally, I believe. Simon, I think you live in Canada. You know, when you do live in, somewhere else, I guess you live in Vancouver. But you know, coaches are you know, this is a global. This profession is becoming a global community and working around the world now. And you guys are coordinating all that in China, which is very impressive. You've both had extensive coaching careers. You've worked at the highest level. You've authored articles. You've for the journals in the UK and NSCA. You know, maybe been a professor. What I'd like you guys to tell me is, I usually kind of go into, you know, your background and things along those lines, but rather than do that, point to one experience, you know, in your background that really kind of defines you. Really, you would say that this is the point in which I kind of really became the person I am today.
I'll let you go first.
Thanks. Wow, what a question. To be honest, actually, I think it was probably my wife and I's decision to leave the UK. And when we left the UK, we were kind of 26, 27. Lots of other people were, like our friends and our relatives were kind of a similar age. We're all kind of settling down, buying houses, that kind of stuff. And we just went down a different path and just thought, how do we know if this is where we want to settle down if we don't try living somewhere else? Okay. So we packed up our stuff and we went backpacking for 6 months on our way to Canada, and we found an amazing life in Canada. It was hard. Like, you would think moving from the UK to Canada would be about as easy as a transition could be. You know, two English speaking countries, Commonwealth countries, quite a lot in common. And yet actually it's still pretty tough. You've left everything that you know behind. You've left your family, you've left your friends, and you're basically starting all over again. So I think probably that experience has had a huge impact on me, and probably actually having done that has helped me to be successful here in China.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
I guess I would say probably
the first journal article that I got authored when that was accepted. So back in 2013, I authored an article in the NSCA's Strength and Conditioning Journal. And that was about hockey. So my background is in ice hockey, and I'm from the UK. So as you can imagine, not many people really know that we have any hockey over here. So the fact that that got published and kind of continues really to this day to get downloaded and people are sort of showing an interest in it was a huge thing for me. And I guess sort of being a student at university, you see these articles that are out there in journals and think, God, these guys are just so super smart. And then the next thing I know is you know, I've kind of released one myself. So yeah, so absolutely. That was a huge thing for me to big step forward, I think.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with both of you guys. You know, I think for me, you know, going to NFL Europe for the first time and going outside of the country for the first time, I mean, it just, it exposed me to a whole new world. I mean, it just, you know, made the world actually smaller. And that was huge. And being, you know, picking up and moving. I think a lot of coaches, you know, a lot of the young coaches that are listening to this, sometimes they're such homebodies that they, you know, they don't want to move too far from home. They don't want to take jobs that are outside of their region or outside of the country. And that's one of the absolute best things you can do as a young coach, to grow and challenge. It's no different than, you know, the basic principle of progressive overload, right? You gotta tax yourself past your present capacity.
Absolutely. I think it's also such a competitive industry that if you're not the one willing to take that step, someone else will.
Absolutely.
And then from a like personal growth and development perspective, like certainly for like, I think Steve and I, when we grew up and studied in the UK, everything was coming out of the US.
Sure.
It's like all the books, all the research, everything was coming out of the US. The UK SEA didn't even exist when I was at university. So for me, heading to North America was like a natural kind of progression for me.
Right.
I think now there's a huge amount, there's almost a bit of a change, and actually there's a lot coming out of Europe right now. UK SEA has really grown and developed as and kind of got its own identity now. But yeah, definitely when I was at university, North America seemed like the place to be.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, and what you said, Steve, I think, you know, as coaches, you know, I wrote in the book that I put out that, you know, there's three stages. You know, being a technician, which is being a coach, but then there's becoming a manager and an entrepreneur. And part of that management is sharing your knowledge, you know, and leading people and putting out a resource like a journal article that you know, automatically kind of catapults you in a different class and progresses you in the profession. So I agree with you both 100% on that. You don't get to the position that you guys are in where you're leading hundreds of coaches without making some mistakes along the way. What's one of the biggest mistakes you've made and how you've learned from it?
Shall I go?
I was going to say another tough question, so I'm going to let you field this one first.
Thanks. I have been known to be a little bit impatient, I think, in my time. I want things to happen very quickly. I've wanted to work in the NHL. That's kind of been my end goal for a long time. And there was a period of time a couple of years ago when quite a lot of sort of AHL jobs were coming up. And I thought, yeah, these would be good ones for me to try and get in. Had a couple of good discussions with some NHL coaches who were leading the recruitment. And ultimately, in every case, they ended up taking on an intern. I didn't take particularly well to some of that rejection. Fired off a couple of emails that, on reflection, definitely did not help me. You know, it's a very small world. And it's the one thing that absolutely I've learned now is that where we're in a position to recruit people, the resumes that often I see, either I know that person or I know someone who knows that person. And you know, I think it's, you really need to be careful and consider how you speak to people in all walks of life, because relationships, and especially here in China, but relationships are really, really difficult to build up, and they're really easy to break.
Yeah, I think we've all done that, but it's hard to take that rejection, especially when you feel like you're credentialed and you're qualified. But we both know that there's a difference between being credentialed and qualified and being able to be a high level in that role. And so I agree with that 100%. Simon?
I said to you, mine's probably somewhat similar. I think it was actually when I was in China, when I first arrived, my first couple of months, and things weren't necessarily as I'd expected. I will admit I didn't really know what to expect, and yet somehow it wasn't what I expected. And definitely there were a couple of times there where I think you're a long way from home, and you know, you, the support network that you think should be there is in another country, and there's a big time difference and everything, and you feel vulnerable. And you know, I've certainly shot off a few text messages that I would say I would regret sending, because actually when I looked back a couple of days later, I was like, yeah, I was feeling very, very vulnerable there and felt like I was very much out of my comfort zone. And yet actually I probably shouldn't have communicated like that. So again, that's something that I think we're both cognizant of when we're managing all the stuff.
Yeah, I've often said on this show that, you know, my biggest mistake has always been, you know, confusing emotion with passion. And, you know, I've always related that back to dealing with the athletes, but it's also what you guys are saying with being in the coaching profession. I mean, there's definitely ups and downs and rough patches and people you don't agree with and things like that. And you want to show how passionate you are about a topic, or that you feel like you're the most qualified person, or this maybe this shouldn't be happening the way it is happening. But you often have this emotional response that sometimes, you know, it can, you know, just like it can wreck a relationship with an athlete, it can often wreck a relationship with colleagues and coworkers and those types of things. And so you got to be extremely, extremely careful. Yeah, great insight, guys. I want to get in a little bit of China, like we talked about. I mean, there's, you know, you've mentioned that. I would echo that sentiment where, you know, I didn't know really what to expect, but at the same time, it wasn't quite what we expected either, you know, with placing coaches over there. But I mean, there's been tons of good, and then just a little bit of things where you've had to learn how to deal with the culture, you know, and work within the culture. Give us some of the misconceptions and truths about coaching over in China.
One of the first things I would say is I was expecting kind of militaristic style environments. I kind of had this vague impression that everyone would be, you know, wearing their national uniforms and lining up to listen to the anthem before training. And yeah, everything would be super organized. And I got here and actually everyone is so relaxed, so laid back. It's a very informal environment. People are super friendly. They're like, people here are generally a lot more touchy-feely than I'm used to, for sure. Like, particularly being British, we don't tend to show much emotion, and we don't tend to we tend to give each other a lot of space. Yeah. And coming here and seeing the, you know, kind of the athletes and staff and coaches, and they're actually, you know, people are very emotional. They're very they hug and they touch each other a lot, and it's like, oh, okay, this is quite a tactile culture, which is definitely, I'm a little bit more used to that having lived in North America, but definitely my British side is not so used to that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think there's there are a lot of misconceptions. The biggest, hands down, the biggest misconception is everybody thinks that the Wi-Fi in China is going to be really good. It's terrible. I'll say that right now.
Surprised it's been on Zoom this long.
Yeah. I think, though, a lot of the time, it's sometimes the truths are almost more shocking sometimes. So often you'll hear people kind of say, oh, I've heard that they have these big training camps for athletes and they take kids out of school really young. It's like, yeah, they do. Or they'll say, oh, but I've heard that the athletes train 6 days a week. Like, yeah, that's also true. Certainly, actually, coming here, the truth, those sorts of truths that I've found have really just served me to think, well, I still don't necessarily buy in 100% of the way they do things, but it's definitely changed my way of thinking about how we do it in the West. And I think there's definitely a middle ground to be found for sure.
Yeah, I would agree with that for sure. Well, you know, I think that's a great point. I mean, you know, whether it be the UK or Canada or the US, I mean, you guys have experienced four different ways or three different ways of doing things. And you definitely see the good and bad probably in all three or four. What's it like working with a different culture? I mean, having to go in, especially in a leadership role, and work within a culture that, you know, some, you know, there's times that you don't always agree with what's going on, and there's times that you're like, man, wait a minute, we might be doing this wrong in the West.
that definitely happens a lot. I think it's so if we start from the coaching perspective, as that's like I think where we've been for the majority of the time we've been here in the last 2 years, there's definitely times where you just have to respect the hierarchy of things here and kind of understand your place within that, and that's kind of how you deal with the culture, is just by kind of knowing your place and knowing that, do you know what? I'm not going to be the one that gets to make a final decision. So I'll make my recommendation and then I'll leave it and let the head coach make his or her decision and just stand back. I think from coming in from more of a leadership position, I'm in a bit more of a position now to kind of push on some of the things that I think are genuinely important, and can actually have those discussions at a higher level. And so, yeah, I think there's a little bit of a difference in kind of like knowing your place within the culture here.
Yeah, I definitely echo that. Especially, I say, we've both worked out here as coaches, and it's a very, very different relationship to anything you find in North America, in Europe. You are, like I say, this is a hierarchical society. The head coach is above everybody else. You have to accept that you are pretty low down the pecking order. And if you push too forcefully, even though you might just have the absolute best interests of the athletes at heart, if you push those too forcefully, you're always going to be on the losing end of the battle. So it takes a lot of patience. Without doubt, it can be very frustrating at times. I think that's one of the great things about our project here is previously, as you kind of alluded to, there's been a lot of different companies and a lot of coaches that are pretty much on their own.
Sure.
And now we have kind of this support network of close to 100 sort of foreign support staff here. So yeah, we've all felt these frustrations. There's always somebody here that you can come and grab a coffee with, go and have dinner with, go and have a beer with, to kind of get those frustrations out in a fairly productive way.
Yeah, I want to come back to that opportunity to network, but I think for all the young coaches that are listening, you know, whether or not you're coaching in China or the UK or Canada or the US, you know, there's a great quote that one of my sport coaches told me in kind of when I arrived to a new institution. He was like, look, if you want me to love you, then love my kids, you know, and make sure that you're taking care of them. And our role as strength coaches, as strength professionals, is very service oriented. I mean, we have to have a servant's heart and know that we're just a small piece of the pie. We're not the whole pie, you know, and sometimes that's hard, especially like in the US where in the collegiate system where the strength coach has a tremendous impact on the entire program. And, you know, at the end of the day, when you're talking with elite athletes, you know, you're just a piece. I mean, you got sports med, you got strength and conditioning, you got nutrition, you got, you know, everything, rehab, you know, the whole deal. And, you know, I think, you know, when you accept that and know that you are, yeah, just a small piece, but you're an important piece, sitting back, understanding that the coach and the athlete are the ones that you're serving, and that ultimately you have to work within them and work within their goals and their, you know, plan. That's ultimately when you have the most success, you know. Then you can find, when you develop that trust, then you have the opportunities like you guys are at a leadership role or, you know, through time to be able to make small changes, you know, that might lead to ultimately what you want. So I think that's great. You know, go ahead. Yeah.
As you say, I couldn't agree more on the trust and relationship front, because you can be completely kind of right in your beliefs and what you're trying to do, but if you don't have buy-in from the head coach and the willingness to that they will trust in you to do it, you're never going to have the chance to do it. So building a really strong relationship and an understanding that you're actually, like, as head coach and you as a support staff, you're there to work together for the same end goal. And right. So whenever you're doing anything, it's got to be a collaboration and a kind of support of the, particularly here, like supporting the head coach in their kind of overall plan for everyone.
Yeah. And I think, you know, especially, I mean, even at any age, you can continue to learn and learn from the people that you work with and collaborate with on a daily basis. But especially as a young strength coach, you know, sometimes, hey, shut up and listen to the guy that's been coaching Olympic years, you know, that person may know what they're doing too, you know, and that athlete that's at the highest level, they may understand their body maybe a little bit better than you do, you know. And so there's definitely opportunities to learn. You're going to become a better coach by being around those individuals too. So you don't always have all the right answers. Steve, you mentioned, you know, an opportunity there. I think that what's really cool, what I think is, at least been my experience in China personally, as well as many of the coaches that we have over there, but what an awesome opportunity that exists to network with that many different coaches from so many different places. I mean, when you say you can go have a coffee with, you know, a Polish strength coach, a Czech strength coach, a Canadian strength coach, and an American strength coach, I mean, yeah. What an awesome opportunity that exists.
Yeah, it's absolutely unbelievable from the professional side of things. And you're right. I think at last count, we had somewhere like 19 different countries represented in our coaching and sports medicine support staff. So a huge amount of experience from all over the globe. Absolutely brilliant. I actually tweeted something the other day. So Simon and I, we were lucky to be at the Asian Games. We were helping support the rowing team. We were sat in a tent doing some recovery work. There were three head coaches there. Between them, they'd won 12 gold medals at the Olympics.
Wow.
And you're just sitting there chatting to them, because ultimately, they're just normal people. So, yeah, those opportunities they're massive. And then there's the kind of whole social side away from that as well. You know, you're learning about other cultures. And the funny thing that I have found most of all is, as different as China is, it's so the same. So people will come up and say, oh, well, I can't believe this happens in China. I can't believe that happens in China. And when you really dig down to it, it happens all over the world. So Great. Do you know what? Your head coach has told you that he doesn't like your training and he wants to do something else. That's not a China problem. Yeah. That happens across the world and you just have to deal with it. Yeah.
Exactly. And it's going to make you, you know, again, it's going to make you a better coach. I mean, I tell the story all the time that, You know, when I worked at the University of South Florida, I worked there for 10 years of my career, and I had a really tough head coach. I mean, probably as tough as anybody in the world. And when I first got the job as a young 22-year-old head strength coach, I did probably 20% of what I wanted to do and about 80% of what he wanted to do. And by the time in 10 years, I mean, I never got to 100%, but I probably got to about 80% of doing what I wanted to do and 20%. And that, you know, that struggle and that back and forth throughout those entire 10 years made me a better coach, made me prepare better, made me be able to communicate my point better. And if things didn't work, I would come at it at a different angle and then maybe a different angle. And I think that process that exists when you have to do that, I think that's really the gold in these types of experiences when you go. And hopefully you go and you have a fantastic time and it's exactly what you want. And you go on and that's what you're coaching for the rest of your life. But we all know that this profession, there's very many in this profession, you're probably not going to be in any one role for a long, long time. So that the variety of experiences is important. You know, when you're working with Olympic athletes, and this is a little bit more technical question, you know, but when you're writing the quadrino plan, I mean, when you're dealing with the quadrino athlete, you know, it's not just you're trying to peak for this Saturday coming up, this competition coming up. I mean, you're working with athletes that have to perform at their very best at a specific time 4 years from now. You know, how do you go about deciding and building that quadrino plan?
I don't have to deliver a magic answer to this one. It's like, obviously a lot of it comes down to really kind of getting to know your athletes. Like you said, trusting in the head coach and working with the head coach on their plan. We test and we measure athletes, but so often you forget the human element in that they're not machines, and that each person's going to respond very differently to the stimulus that you give them. Right. So being like organized and planned, but allowing for flexibility is like one of the most important things, I think. It's a bit of a cop-out answer, I know, but it's and then particularly when you're working with athletes at this kind of level, they also have media engagements and things like this. It's like everyone thinks that Olympic athletes' training plans are perfect. Oh, yeah. And nowhere in the world are they perfect. The athletes have to travel way more than you think they do. They have to do more media and sponsor events than you think they have to do. They have to, the anti-doping agency turn up and they have to go do that. And they have to go and go to the embassy to get visas. And all of these things come up in their training plans that really mean you have to have a strong plan and a strong set of, a sort of strong kind of guiding structure. But you need to allow a lot of flexibility.
Yeah, I'd absolutely echo that. It's a case of believe in the process and be ready to change at any minute. Because, like you say, as well as, yes, they have an Olympics coming up in 4 years, but they're going to have a whole manner of competitions across each year. So you have these multiple peaks that you need to hit throughout the year, whilst also aiming, and the Olympics is just one. So I said, we've just had the Asian Games, which surprisingly nobody outside of Asia has ever heard of, but it's the biggest sporting event in the world.
Right.
It has more athletes and more sports than the Olympics.
Right.
It's a phenomenal event, and that happened 2 years before the Olympics, and that was a huge event for us. So, definitely again, keep it simple, believe in the process, and just know that nothing's going to go to plan. And you're going to have to work around that. Don't get married into your periodization so deep that you can't get out of it. Because yeah. if you're convinced that you need four lifts this week, and all of a sudden you have a media appearance and you can only lift twice, over the course of 4 years, that's not going to make the biggest difference.
No doubt. I think that's exactly what I was looking for. I mean, that adaptability, that's what you have to have. And I think what you guys have done a fantastic job of bringing is both, I mean, there's been a lot of, you know, is having both qualitative and quantitative data to support what you're doing. And you know, using, those questionnaires and those daily interactions and things like that to get, you know, a feel for the athlete, but then to turn around and back that up with some technology that you've been introducing and things along those lines to get some historical data, some numbers to be able to track how they respond to different stresses and different stimuluses, I think is important. And then from that is when you go back to work. I mean, you create little pockets of goals and you evaluate throughout, and that's a constant battle. But it's not something where you write this perfect plan on paper. And I think sometimes young coaches, they think that it's like, and they're so Excel and so program focused that if any change to that, you know, they short circuit. And you have to be adaptable. You have to be able to go with the flow. And sometimes, you know, that athlete isn't going to come in 100% because they had a media appearance and they had to travel from wherever and all those types of things. So I agree with that. 100%. I think what I've learned in my career, you know, working, you know, all throughout, you know, all the different levels, highest level and throughout, is I've learned that the higher I've gone, the less ego I can have, you know. I think, you know, and it's maturity is more than anything, but talk a little bit about, you know, ego and its place in coaching.
Well, I think this was something that I remember being like sort of talked about when I was a lot younger, and always just thinking, oh, I don't have an ego. I know, that's not something I'm going to have to worry about. And then you actually do get a little bit older and you see a few younger people coming through, and you see the kind of battles that people try and fight, and you suddenly realize, you're like, yeah, actually that was probably me when I was that age, and that's really not a battle worth fighting. That's because right. You know we were talking earlier about like knowing, like respecting the sort of head coach's experience, respecting the athlete's experience, understanding that they actually have a huge wealth of knowledge and that you can learn from that, and also understanding that at the very best, we are supporting the athlete at that moment in time while we're working with them. They've come through from a young age. They've been playing sport their whole lives. They've probably worked with a dozen different technical coaches, maybe more support staff, physios, strength coaches. Like, you're just the one that's there now. So understanding that, I think, is huge.
Agreed.
Yeah, and again, like, it comes back to this programming and planning issue. And like you say, you can be a young coach that goes into a team, you know, and especially here in China, we have some really world-leading teams. And you can say, oh, well, I know that the best thing for their development is they're going to have to do this on this day. And the head coach says, nope, sorry, we're going to do this.
Right.
Now, I've seen so many coaches blow up because, and it's born out of, a kind of love for the athlete and wanting the athlete to succeed. So it comes from a good place.
Yeah, it always comes from a good place and, you know, athletes' interests at heart.
Absolutely, yeah. But you've got to, like you say, pick your battles, but it's hard when you're younger to know what the right battles are to pick.
Agreed. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think that's so important to have that adaptability to sit back and learn, and understand that when you are younger, You have to accept the fact that you don't know everything and that you're going to go through the process. And, you know, you may ultimately end up being right. You may, you know, and you're going to be able to point to that back later in your career and say, hey, look, when I was with so-and-so and such and such coach, you know, they didn't, you know, I wanted to try this. They didn't try it and it didn't work, you know? I agree with that. That's the hard part, is having that passion for the athletes and feeling like you're wanting to fight for the cause. But ultimately, you know, you said earlier that the human element or the emotional element, I mean, what you don't want to do is you don't want to send an elite athlete into a competition with a kink in the armor and them thinking everybody's not on the same page, you know. Yep. Have those conversations behind closed doors with coaches, but when you walk out, you're absolutely on the same page and fighting the same battle. And that emotional side and that mental side of the athlete, and we all know it. I mean, working with elite athletes, just because they're elite athletes doesn't mean that they're mentally elite all the time. And
absolutely,
make sure that you're constantly uplifting them. As you guys have, you know, so have I. I mean, I've worked with athletes in a lot of countries, and they're all different. They're all different in their own way. But China can be even a little bit more different in some ways. Beautiful people, beautiful country, tons of good, no doubt about it. But there are challenges, you know, Wi-Fi and you know, environment and population you know, maybe how they treat different, you know, people and things along those lines. Talk a little bit. I mean, we're recruiting coaches and with the Olympics there in that part of the world for the next two Olympics, essentially, what is the perfect coach for China look like? I mean, if you're a young coach listening, not a young coach, but if you're a coach listening to this and saying, hey, I want to work with elite level athletes. What does that coach look like for what you guys are trying to do over there in China?
I generally say the main things are being like open-minded and willing to learn, is hugely important, because I think, like Steve said about the different training styles, like there are things that I've definitely learned here that I'm now going to take back home. So not just thinking that you're coming in as a foreign expert to help teach and guide, but a willingness to accept things the other way. A great one is, you know, understanding more about traditional Chinese medicine, because we work in a multidisciplinary environment, and some of the team doctors have been trained in traditional Chinese medicine, and pretty much everywhere here it's kind of blended together with like modern Western medicine. And so just I'm being willing and open to engage with people on that and actually discuss work, how you can work together so that their acupuncture treatment can go really well with the rest of your overall plan. So I'd say, yeah, the kind of open-mindedness and willingness to learn.
Yeah. I mean, I'd probably throw into that again, sort of definitely related, is knowing that you don't know everything. You don't have all the answers. You're going to come here and some of the things you're going to want to do won't work. And some of the things that you think don't work do work. This experience for me has 100% made me a better coach. I am such a better coach now, in ways that I would never have imagined previously. We look for people who they need to be able to smile in the face of adversity. Yeah. They need to be flexible. They need to have a good sense of humor. Like Simon said, be ready and willing to learn. But as you kind of said, like, the athletes here are amazing. Every athlete I've ever worked with has been amazing. So if you come in and you come from the right place, you're going to have a great time.
Yeah, I think, there's no doubt about it that you become a better coach. And that's been the conversations that I've had, you know, with the coaches that I've worked with over there, is not only, I mean, so many times we're able to rely on the auditory part of coaching, right? But I mean, when you don't speak the language, then you better be able to really be able to effectively use visual and kinesthetic coaching cues to get that across. And so now if you can build that side of your palate, when you go back to wherever, you know, wherever you do speak the language, you know, being able to use all three, I mean, makes you extremely powerful as a coach, you know. So, but I think, you know, I don't think you can be a type A personality. I don't think you can be like, this is my way or the highway. I think you have to be adaptable. I think you have to have a sense of adventure, and you know, and every challenge, every wall that's put up is it's an opportunity instead of, you know, an obstacle, you know. And I think when you look at things like that, if you have that type of mindset, this type of experience is for you. You know, if you're the one that it's always somebody else's fault and, you know, woe is me. And the China is not the place for you, you know?
Absolutely. It's funny. You just said that about like putting up walls. And I just suddenly thought this analogy of like, you can go and run 1500 meters on a track and it's, you know, it's nice and smooth. You know, all the surfaces, you've got the lines to follow, or you can go and do something like Tough Mudder.
Yeah.
And it's like, they're both great events, but like if you're the kind of person that loves climbing over obstacles and getting muddy and you know doing that, you're gonna fit in very well in China. If you're the kind of person that, like you said, is kind of a bit more of a type A, it's like, hey, I want to do it like this, and it has to be structured and organized, and I want it to just follow the white lines,
right,
and go around a few laps. You know, yeah, maybe you're going to struggle, but maybe you'd struggle moving anywhere.
Agreed. Yeah, I agree with that 100%. You'll have a hard time in this profession in general.
Yeah.
Well, guys, this has been awesome. We end the show with some resources here. Give us best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
Day one of my master's program, one of the first things my instructor said was, keep data. It's going to save your job. When it all goes wrong, when the sort of higher ups are looking for someone to get rid of, and the head coach's head's on the block, he's going to pass that down. If you can prove that what you're doing is working, you're going to be in a pretty safe spot. So I'm the first guy to admit I'm definitely an Excel geek, and I'm definitely a guy who keeps a lot of stats and that sort of thing. But yeah, for me, for sure. Make sure you're tracking what's going on and evidencing what you're doing.
Yeah.
My one sounds kind of lame, but I think it's because I never really understood it when I was younger. And that is the keep it simple.
Yeah.
And you know what? When you're studying and you're fresh out of university, you think what you're doing is quite simple because that's all you've been studying. That's all you've been reading. So to you, it seems very simple. But when you actually start throwing in all the other variables involved, like we mentioned before, with travel, with media, with everything else, your, you know, plan isn't going to work unless it's incredibly simple. And that allows you to be adaptable. And, you know, I also think, whenever you're working with an athlete, if you're still able to make gains and make progress with the most basic of programs, that gives you a huge room for growth. We were talking about how you plan for a 4-year cycle. Well, if in year one, you're able to have a really basic program that still gets you the gains and the results you want, you've still got different levels to go to for the next 3 years. Yeah. If you come in with complex periodization structures and things like this, you've really got nowhere else to go. So I would absolutely, now that I actually understand why people would say, oh, make sure you keep it simple. I was like, I always thought I was, but now I really, I think I understand that a lot better now.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's just, again, it's coaching maturity. It's the environment and seeing that firsthand. Give us a book, app, and website recommendation.
Book. I love The Culture Map by Erin Mayer. I was given that about a year ago. Would absolutely, well, I wouldn't say I would recommend it. I do recommend it for any coach who's coming to work abroad, but actually anyone. It's a business book, talks a lot about how different cultures can manage to work together. So that's a super good book. Website goes back again, I guess, to my kind of research days, I suppose. ResearchGate, that's researchgate.net. Free access to journals. Once you leave university, it can be really hard to get your hands on journals. So that's got a ton of really good resources out on there. Yep. And app, nothing to do with coaching, but everything to do with living in China is WeChat. I know you have it. Most people outside of China haven't heard of it. It's the biggest app in the world, has over 1 billion users. It's a combination of WhatsApp, eBay, Facebook. Uber, Facebook. It's absolutely everything rolled into one, and you cannot function in China without it. So 100% WeChat is the app for me.
It's impressive, yeah, I agree.
It really, when you actually live here, like, it becomes everything.
Yeah.
You go down the street, you don't have to take your wallet, you take your phone, and you just pay for everything through WeChat.
Yeah.
Split the bill in a restaurant with your friends, and you pay with WeChat. Like, it's literally just everything.
Yeah, I wish we had it here. I wish it was popular here in the States. I love it.
Can we get there? It's going to get there.
It's growing. Last time I was back in Vancouver, there were a few places that were accepting WeChat Pay.
Really?
It's starting to take off.
Huh.
So we'll see. I think it's going to expand over the next few years.
So give us your book and website. Sounds like you probably go with WeChat as well.
Yeah, I got a couple of different ones. I know that Steve wants me to mention his book.
I can't mention it myself.
But yeah, I mean, I have to admit I haven't actually read it, so I probably shouldn't recommend it. But the handbook on strength and conditioning by Routledge is one that Steve has contributed to on the ice hockey front.
I have it up there somewhere. Back there somewhere.
It's a fairly hefty tome. For anyone thinking of coming to China, actually, there's a great book called Lost on Planet China by J. Martin Troost. And it's he's a Canadian travel writer who I think he spent 6 months traveling around China, and it kind of chronicles his journey. And it's an absolutely great book. I actually listened to it as an audio book. And so with the amount of traveling we do with, you don't have your regular TV or cable here. So actually I'm going to say audiobooks.com for the app because it's a great way to be able to get hold of English language books. You can't just pop down to the local bookshop here. Amazon doesn't really exist here. We have Taobao, which is great, but the stuff's not usually in English. So like, something like that is a really great resource. And then the website, I'm going to go with Science for Sport. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's been going for a couple of years now. Some great... English guys started it, but they've spread all over the world now. I love their performance digest. I think, like Steve mentioned, that the research gate, it is hard to kind of get access to those things when you're no longer at university. And they've done a great job of making it accessible, actually giving you some common sense sort of feedback in how you would implement it and critique the paper. And you can actually link to the paper itself.
Yeah, we actually have Owen coming on the show next month. So,
fantastic. Yeah, great.
It'll be great. Yeah. Well, guys, I mean, a fantastic resource. Great. I mean, it's been a great episode. But most importantly, I mean, like I said at the very beginning, I mean, once you guys came on board and the efforts that you've done to make things more organized and fight for the not fight for the coaches in that there's a battle, but, you know, to be able to structure things and be a conduit and a champion for the strength coach in China. It's been amazing. And the work that you've done has been fantastic. And I just, I truly appreciate how you've treated the coaches that we've sent over there. And I know other companies do as well. And you guys are doing some fantastic things, impacting it. I mean, it's one of the largest cultures in the world. And for me, one of the reasons I took the job I did and started the company that I did is so that we can make a global impact. And you guys are doing that on a big, big scale. And just happy to know you and happy to be a part of what you're doing over there in China.
Ron, yeah. Truly appreciate the words. Thank you so much. It's been great coming on and having a chat with you.
Yeah, thanks very much. It's always been a pleasure working with you, and I've enjoyed working with that have come, from yourself. And really appreciate that.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.